The Lord be with you. In the midst of all of the fun and commotion that we got to enjoy last week, we didn't get to sit very long with the Advent theme of the week on Hope Sunday, which I think might be a bit of a downside of the habit of doing Hanging of the Greens on the first Sunday of Advent. That being said, in a cynical and despairing world like ours, hope is a whole lot. And I would say it's surely worthy of a little bit of our reflection. So if you'll allow me, we're going to backtrack for just a few beats so we can regain our Advent footing. Hope is a wild idea, and it's a brave way to live even. Hope is staying up all night in a barn with a struggling newborn kitten. Hope is lashing together the pieces of your broken boat so that you can make a raft. Hope stands in a crowd of cynics and scoffers and says, "Yes, I know. The odds are against us, but we are still here and our cause is just and true." Hope keeps AA meetings afloat each week. Hope is tender and vulnerable. It doesn't get to be cool or clever. Hope isn't delusional. But it does often take us into the territory of miracles and long shots. Hope is honest about reality, but it keeps on showing up anyhow. We would not be here were it not for hope. And where could we hope to go without it? Hope is how we make a life of faith for ourselves in the here and now. Just a few months before his assassination, Dr. Martin Luther King stood on the steps of the Washington Monument declaring, "We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope." During Advent, each week we light these candles and we drop these heavy and ponderous and beautiful words on them like peace and joy and love. And we dare one another to open our hearts to such dreams. And it is only in persistent hope that these themes are kept alive. We can hold on to them as possibilities in our realm. Holding on to hope takes courage. It's a hard thing. But what a gift we offer this world when we dare to hope. Are we caught up? I'd say we're caught up. There's a classic Hollywood film that if you hang around with me, you probably hear me talk about it now and then. It holds up. It's still one of my favorites. See if you can guess it. It's a story about a guy who partners with his best friend, and they both want to make it big in the motion picture business. And for a while there, it looks like their dreams are going to be dashed because of fate and consequence. But then after a night of brainstorming with his best friend and his best new girl, they conceive of a brave strategy that just might save the day. And this changes everything. And so our protagonist walks and skips and dances his way home with joy in his heart and a smile on his face. And then even as buckets of rain start to pour down on him, nothing can dampen his spirit. What a glorious feeling. He's happy again. He's laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in his heart and he's ready for love because, of course, he's singing in the rain, which for my money isn't even the best song in what might be one of the greatest musicals of all time. If you're paying attention, the first few chapters of Luke's gospel are actually a musical. And really, I don't even think I'm doing one of those just stay with me preacher's logic moments here. Because in Luke's telling of the Advent story, when the gospel writer really wants to get us to track with the exposition, Luke highlights the section with a song. It might as well have a note, dear reader, in case you are missing the point. Please note that this is what is happening on a cosmic, prophetic, spiritual level. A 1, 2, 3, 4. Take it away. With nods to Hebrew tradition and story and prophecy and poetry, the characters break out in spontaneous, spirit-filled song. And no, we don't have the sheet music. Luke tells us the story of the Christ unfolding event with key characters singing their hearts out. For a start, we get the Magnificat, that exuberant celebration, a song with such heart, where Mary's famous opening line is, "My soul magnifies the Lord." And later on, the audience goes quiet and leans in as wise old Simeon, holding the Christ child, sings with a gentle hush, nearly a whisper, not a sound in the house, "Lord, let me die in peace. My eyes have seen the one." And of course, there's got to be a big production number. There's a radiant solo, a chorus of angels singing to shepherds, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth good peace among those whom he favors." But today we're in a passage which holds the song of Zechariah. It's a song of such depth and energy, the lectionary editors swapped it in place of a psalm for this week. But it's worth noting that Zechariah didn't start out at the beginning of the story singing. In fact, it had been quite a long wait. Zechariah had met an angel in the temple. And this angel told him that he and his wife would not only have a son, but this boy would grow to become the greatest prophetic force in the world. And even though Zechariah was standing in the temple, in the presence of an angel, hearing astonishing wonders, the man stood there like a total knucklehead and said, "How can this be? I'm an old man, and my wife Elizabeth is getting on in years." The angel was understandably unimpressed and prescribed a season of silence for the doubtful man. And so, with a snap of, I don't know, a wand? Fingers? Whatever an angel carries, Zechariah was struck mute. Months and months without a word from this man. And as Elizabeth's body grew her baby to term, a song was taking shape in Zechariah's heart. Finally, on the baby's naming day, to the surprise of everyone, when both parents miraculously choose John for his name, Zechariah's mouth was opened. And to the amazement of all the neighbors, this song poured out, and what a song! Zechariah belted out such a number, singing with his full chest. A song born in months of humble, spirit-soaked reflection. The doubting man had become an enthusiast, a prophet even, joy overflowing in his heart. And as the song unfolds, we readers take note. This gospel writer's purpose on a cosmic prophetic level. Zechariah starts by celebrating God's favor on his people. Prophets who foretold a day of rescue. Promises made to their ancestors. This people that would be saved from the wrath of their enemies. A song of rescue for a nation. Big trouble for all of those enemies. And then as this song comes to a close, Zechariah sang about this role that his amazing child would play, preparing the way, giving knowledge of salvation, of the forgiveness of sins. This is wild stuff. And then we get two amazing lines in a beautiful closing verse. "By the tender mercies of our God, the dawn from on high will break upon us. Give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. By your tender mercy, Lord, guide our feet in the way of peace. Might we dare one another to hope for peace? It's a heavy weight for a candle to carry, and such an ephemeral thing, be it the big peace in this violent world or the little peace for our restless hearts. Human beings, generally speaking, are not great at walking in paths of peace. I don't know if you knew that. We can talk about peace. We can hope for peace. It's such a beautiful pursuit. Peace is the refuge and hope that our souls long for. Peace is light in the darkness. Peace is hard work. Peace is costly. Peace is failure and then trying again. Peace is vulnerable. Peace is fragile. Peace often feels too good to be true. In Zechariah's day, the Romans had famously imposed their brutal and bloody brand of peace on the world. And so has every empire since. For 2,000 years or so now, Christians have practiced this awkward tradition of Advent peace. We celebrate Christ's arrival and we sing about these very same promises that Zechariah celebrated. God's promise, peace, and the great reversal, divine justice for all of the tyrants and warmongers and despots and exploiters in this world. Light for those who sit in darkness. We sing for peace with our whole chest. We name the promise of peace. We proclaim the peace of Christ. We pass the peace to one another. We sing with the angels, peace on earth, gloria. And then we get up the next day and we read the news. And then we lay in bed at night, and heavy is the trouble in our restless hearts. And yet still we dare to hope for peace. A life of faith is formed in this very Advent tension. The church that celebrates God with us is the same church that still waits for the day of the Lord. And we wait still. So often the heaviness of us all, of it all, leaves us doubtful, heartbroken, discouraged. We hear ourselves mutter, how can this be? What more can we say? Sometimes we sit in silence because we've run out of words or there are no words. History's cruelties or life's unfairness can be overwhelming. The Spirit sits with us in darkness, though, and waits with us. Even still, the same Spirit stirs in us. And if we give our hearts to these wild dreams of peace, calling us together that we might be peacemakers even, growing in us courage and creativity, guiding our feet into the way of peace, this is what we are called to for these days that we are given. This is the path before us. In October, Anne Bellamy and I got a chance to visit the Martin Luther King Memorial in Washington, D.C. Has anyone here been to that spot? It's an astonishingly beautiful piece of work, and it's a really inspiring place. On the National Mall, next to all the monuments that celebrate imperial and national power, and in between all those memorials for fallen soldiers from decades and decades of war, Dr. King's monument honors a man who gave his life to the cause of peace and justice. Etched into the stone on the retaining walls around the memorial are quotes from some of his famous speeches. I'll give you two. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And, for good measure, true peace is not merely the absence of tension, it is the presence of justice. Anne and I walked around the monument, and then as I sat amidst a group of school children and visitors that are all taking pictures around Dr. King's incredible statue, I sat there, I was profoundly moved by the experience. And not just because someone had made a statue for a Baptist preacher, although maybe that might have been a little bit of it. I sat in the shadow of that great stone carving, and I reflected on the ways that this man had brought such wild and dangerous and beautiful ideas to life. But it's not just this one man, is it? In all of history, we've known, and we haven't known, so many other hopeful dreamers who didn't get a statue. How many times in the tensions of history has the hard path of peace been worked out by those who were called to follow this difficult way? In these months, or in these days of spirit-soaked reflection, of Advent silence and song, may we find our way on the path of peace. Maybe we'll only find comfort in the darkness. Hopefully, we will be inspired and empowered, enthusiasts, and prophets among us. May we give voice to a song of peace by the tender mercies of our God. Amen. Thanks be to God.